I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
Domination and partnership. Our guest this week, Rian Eisler, looks at the history of human society through these two lenses. When in a domination configuration, our familial, economic, and political lives are characterized by things like conquest, imbalance of power, and abuse. Partnership configurations, on the other hand, emphasize the values of caring, consciousness, and creativity at all levels of society.
As the founder of the Center for Partnership Systems and author of several books, including The Chalice and the Blade and The Real Wealth of Nations, Rian has made it her life work to guide us away from domination towards partnership. We got to speak with her about what we can do to reorient our systems around the values of empathy and interconnection so that we can survive and thrive in the 21st century.
Take a listen.
Well, my name is Rian Eisler, and I am a futurist, a system scientist, a cultural historian, an attorney. In other words, my life really is like the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle coming together into what I'm best known for, which are my books based on what I'm also well known for, my multidisciplinary across-cultural historical research that casts a brand new light on our past, present, and the possibilities for our future, including our economic system, which, as we saw during the COVID-19 pandemic, is in dire need of, shall we say, upgrading, changing, transformation. It's not resilient, it's not equitable, it's not sustainable.
That's a very colorful and wide-ranging career you've had.
I'm also president of the Center for Partnership Systems and editor-in-chief of the Interdisciplinary Journal of Partnership Studies. So it's a lot of stuff.
Yes, clearly. When you speak about transformation, what exactly do you mean?
I mean something very specific, a shift from a social configuration that I've identified and called the domination configuration to the other end of a social scale, of the partnership domination social scale that I've called the partnership system, which is more equitable, more gender balanced, takes into account the majority of humanity, women and children, which most social categories like right, left, religious, secular, Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern ignore. And that also provides us with what none of these categories, because they've been oppressive, repressive societies in every one of our conventional categories, Eastern, Western, Northern, Southern, capitalist, socialist, etc. It provides a template for what we have to build in order to, particularly at this level of high technology, not only survive, but thrive.
So when you say the transformation from a domination system to a partnership system, and all of the things that go into that, that's a huge transformation, right? The entire history of humanity has been mostly domination systems.
Actually, the way that we are finding out today and the way I'm describing, it's the opposite. Most of the history of humanity has been orienting more to the partnership configuration. We've been told false stories about, quote, human nature, whether it's original sin or selfish genes. I mean, they fight each other, but really it's the same story, isn't it? We're bad. We have to be rigorously controlled from the top.
And what's the examples of how we've been predominantly a partnership system?
Well, there are many, many examples going way back into our foraging days, which is the vast majority of human existence on our planet. my co-author, Douglas Fry, who is the anthropologist, who is a world authority on foraging societies, has written many books and anthologies on it. He calls them the original partnership societies. Why? These societies, as I said, were more peaceful. In fact, we know from archaeology today that at the most, war is 5 to 10,000 years old, which is a drop in the evolutionary bucket. Fast forward to early farming societies like Çatalhöyük in Turkey, which is described in detail in my book, The Chalice and the Blade, etc. Again, you see more of the partnership configuration. Not only was there no signs of destruction in this ancient site for 1,000 years, but the archaeologist who most recently excavated Çatalhöyük, Ian Hodder, wrote an article, for example, for the Scientific American, reporting that it was a gender-balanced society, as he put it with some surprise, I think. There are no indications that being born male or female had any effect on a person's status.
Wow.
Well, but if you really fast even further forward, aren't we seeing trends in that direction? You see them perhaps most clearly in Northern European nations like Finland and Norway, Sweden, which are moving more towards the partnership configuration. They, first of all, have more democracy and equality in both the family, which is ignored in conventional analysis or marginalized, and the state. Secondly, they have far less violence. I mean, far less violence because it is not needed to maintain these rigid rankings, be it man over man, man over woman, race over race. Mm-hmm. And third, much more gender balanced.
Yes.
I mean, you have about 40 to 50% of the national legislatures are female. And as the status of women rises, so does the status of these stereotypically feminine policies, like childcare, paid parental leave, very generous in these nations. I mean, it's an investment in another term that I introduced, in our human infrastructure.
The idea of family aid?
Yes, they do. And they also have a much lower crime rate, not surprisingly. But it isn't that they're socialist. I mean, I really think that this is a big, big mistake. On the contrary, they have a very healthy business community, business success, precisely because they invest highly in their human infrastructure and what economists like to call high quality human capital.
The correlation between what we just discussed with, I'm not sure if one can say masculine, feminine, not meaning man versus woman. I don't think this has anything to do with that, right?
It doesn't have anything to do with it.
Exactly. So, but what's the correlation to the economy when you say the you actually said economy system upgrading when you reference from the past to the present to the future that we need to upgrade. So what do you mean with that?
Well, it's a really, you're asking two related questions.
Yeah.
And I'll answer the second one first. I have suggested in my work and in The Real Wealth of Nations and in other books in Nurturing Our Humanity, that we really, look, capitalism and socialism, first of all, came out of early industrial times, the 1700s, the 1800s, the 1900s. We're now in the 21st century post-industrial era. so they'd be outdated. But it's worse than that, because they came out of times that oriented more to what I've called the domination side of the partnership domination social scale. So what do I mean by this? Even as late as when Marx wrote in the 1800s, in many places, and I know this as an attorney, it's good to have a very varied background, multidisciplinary, which has to be the trend for our siloed universities, which are still very siloed.
Yes.
But even as late as when he wrote, a wife, and most women were wives, could not sue herself for injuries inflicted on her negligently. Only her husband could for loss of her services. So for both Smith and Marx, caring for people, starting at birth, keeping a clean and healthy home environment, which of course translates into keeping a clean and healthy natural environment, they were for them only reproductive work to be performed for free by a woman in a male-controlled household. We have inherited this, which takes us to the second part of your question. It is not coincidental that in the nations that I just mentioned, contemporary nations like Finland, like Norway, like Sweden, that have moved more to the partnership configuration, women are really 40 to 50% of the national legislature, because as the status of women rises, so also does the social and fiscal and economic priority given to the stereotypically feminine. And I want to again emphasize what you said, Stephanie. We are not talking about anything inherent in women and men. That these societies have more caring policies, both women and men voted for them. Men are very capable of caring for children. And when they do, by the way, they get endorphins, neurochemical rewards of pleasure. So it is not only women who are robbed of their full human potential. You know, they can't be assertive, they can't be leaders. You know, they have to be controlled. And women internalize this as well as men. But it's also men who are deprived. They're supposed to being a real man in a domination system is not being like a woman. And what does that mean? It means not being caring, to be tough rather than, quote, soft. It means violence. Yes, it does mean that. It is interlinked in domination systems with the use of abuse and violence to maintain rigid rankings of domination, in-group versus out-group, etc. So I could go on and will if you want with this, because we're really talking about looking at the whole picture, which we have not. We have been told false stories. And if you leave out of your analysis of social systems the majority of the population, women and children, you have a very flawed analysis. And that's what we've been living with, and it has to change.
Yes.
What?
I 100% agree.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think the one point that you bring out so clearly is so true, that men are not whole, or there's so much more to men experiencing themselves when they are caregivers, right? And, well, masculine people, if you want to say it that way. And yet that's not a missing. It's not noticed as a missing for many men. And that's very interesting to me. My personal story folds into this, because I transitioned from female to male, and I have children. So I noticed when I transitioned to male how hard it was to interact with children in public. society didn't really allow that to happen. And yet it's such a huge part of my sense of self to be able to interact with children and feel those endorphins that you're talking about when you care for children. And I just don't understand why it's not noticed, that missing.
Well, because we have all been in what I call the domination trance. It's really a suppression of consciousness. And it's only as we begin to wake up from it that we can see other possibilities. The problem, and it is a huge problem, and this is why childhood has to be considered, is that people who grow up in domination-oriented subcultures, as mediated through families, education, religion, etc., economics, they feel more comfortable, especially in times of rapid change, of dislocation like ours, with this strong male leader, right? You know, enter Donald Trump in the United States and 70 million people who voted for him. They played follow the leader because they've been brought up. I mean, if you look, for example, at some of the rightist, so-called rightist fundamentalists, which I call domination fundamentalism, really, because what is it? It's top-down rule in both the family and the state or tribe. It is rigid male dominance and holy wars, right? I mean, violence is great, you know, and fear is mistaken for respect. If we can get enough leaders, religious leaders in particular, to stand up against this and say, no, this is not religion, this is domination, fundamentalism, wake up. There is a better alternative, and it goes way, way back in human history, in human evolution, in the human brain. You know that we have studies that are in Nurturing Our Humanity, for example, that the pleasure centers in our brains light up more when we share and care than when we win and dominate. But if we are totally brainwashed into this domination trance, that's why it's very important, for example, that even the American Psychological Association last year said spanking is not only ineffective, you know, you get, quote, bad children, right? Which are, you know, kids who are traumatized, really, but it is psychologically and physically harmful. It is not coincidental that as part of the challenge to domination systems, laws, Sweden pioneered this kind of law, but now 50 other nations at least have it on their books, that it's against the law to use physical discipline against children in families. And studies show how traumatized so many people really are now. You know, we don't want to, after COVID-19, move back to the old normal, where in the wealthy United States, even 1/4 of all children lived in poverty, just to give one example. We have to create a more partnership-oriented normal. And there are lots of trends in that direction. But what we've lacked is that coherent frame. And that's what this work offers.
Yeah, I wonder why Monopoly is still on the market in the United States. You know, I think 96% of all Americans have played Monopoly as a child. And
well, that's part of the brainwashing. You know, it's interesting that I'm very fascinated by the strong connection you draw between the household and the nation state. You know, so often, you know, what happens in the home is just not allowed, is not extrapolated to what happens in the country and or in the community even. And I am fascinated by that and the lessons that we can learn in the home by actually making a movement somehow of having kinder, more collaborative households leading to kinder, more collaborative society.
Well, it's more than collaboration. We're talking about a configuration, because I want to say that while it's easier to collaborate because there is the relationships are more based on mutual respect, mutual accountability, mutual benefit. And there are hierarchies, by the way, in partnership system. But again, I had to coin new words. I call them hierarchy of actualization, where rather than hierarchy of domination, where accountability, respect, benefit don't just flow from the bottom up, but also from the top down. So that we hear so much about transparency today, right? That's another partnership trend. I mean, look, if we look at the environmental movement, at the movement for racial justice, at the movement against all the ugly isms, you know, anti-Semitism, racism, etc. If we look at the movement for social justice, if we look at the women's movement, if we look at the movement for children's rights, I mean, what are they? They're all challenging the same thing, a tradition of domination. And it's only as we put this all together and understand that the struggle for our future is not between capitalism and socialism, or right and left, or religious and secular, or Eastern and Western. I mean, think of all the awful regimes in all of these categories, but it's between those who want to push us back to more rigid domination structures and values and practices, and those who want to really move towards the partnership side. And once we get that, once we understand, but I do want to make the point that, look, there are some, there is some collaboration in domination systems too, that's not the difference. It's the configuration. Because cartels cooperate, gangs cooperate, terrorists cooperate, invading armies cooperate. But it is really beginning to take into account the whole of humanity, including women and children, and as you say, families.
The notion of brainwashing is interesting to me too, because I often wonder if we have had this partnership configuration, and I think what you mean by configuration, and just correct me if I'm wrong, is like who's doing what, or how are you speaking about configuration versus, for example, collaboration? What does that mean? Like, who's involved?
Configuration is a certain structure of a society. If you contrast the partnership and domination configuration, and as I said, it's always a matter of degree, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no pure partnership society, but by configuration, I mean a structure of society in which, first of all, there is, as I said, more democracy and equality in both the family and the state or tribe. Secondly, instead of male dominance, instead of ranking one form of humanity over another, and with it giving children a template for equating difference with superiority or inferiority, with dominating or being dominated, with being served or serving, you have more equal gender partnership in all institutions, not only in the family. I mean, we talk about representative democracy, but if women are only a small percentage, it's kind of ridiculous, isn't it?
Well, New York City just elected a majority female city council.
And there are these trends, but they're very slow. The third thing is abuse and violence, and with it, trauma. Yeah. We know from neuroscience, human brains develop not in a vacuum. They develop after we're born in interaction with their environment, which is cultural, and very different depending on the degree of orientation to either side of the partnership nomination scale in the first 5 years. So if we don't pay attention to that, we just keep replicating, don't we? So really, there are very important trends towards authoritative rather than authoritarian, nonviolent rather than violent parenting, caregiving. That's a very important partnership trend. We have to start connecting the dots.
Brianne, let's look into the future. How would a money system look like when your theory would already been incorporated throughout the world?
Well, first of all, if we move towards what we absolutely must move toward, a caring, let's talk about economics, because, you know, I've introduced four cornerstones that are pretty much fundamental that we must shift from domination to partnership. One is childhood. And, you know, as I said, neuroscience shows the importance of that. The other is gender. I've also gone into our so-called hidden system of gendered values, in which in domination systems, there's always money for prisons, you know, the punitive male head of household, or for weapons and wars. What's that? The hero is killer. But somehow there isn't enough money for caring for children, for nutrition, for health care, for child care, for the soft, for the stereotypically feminine, in both women and men, and in social and economic policy. Moving to a different economics, a caring economics of partnerism. And fourth, of course, really re-examining and changing our stories and our language. Because our language traps us. You know, linguistic psychologists have shown that the categories provided by our language channel our thinking. I mean, think of matriarchy and patriarchy. I mean, matriarchy is not the opposite of patriarchy. It's the other side of the coin. Either mother's rule or father's rule. The real alternative is a partnership society. But if we focus now on the third cornerstone, which is economics, as I said, we have had an economic system that devalues, actually doesn't even include as, quote, productive, the three life-sustaining economic sectors. The natural economy, I mean, for both Smith and Marx, nature was there to be exploited, period. The volunteer community economy and the household economy. Now, we are seeing trends to change that, as I said, even at the national level now with President Biden, right? But we have people who are really stuck in the old way of looking at economics. So what do we need? We need a caring economics of partnerism that really has as its goal what economics should have as its goal, caring for people starting at birth, and caring for our natural life support systems. You cannot, I spoke to the United Nations General Assembly. I said, you can't just tack that on to a fundamentally imbalanced system. You have to change the system, these four cornerstones, starting with them. And, you know, and there are trends in that direction. One very important step towards changing economics are new metrics. We value what we measure and we measure what we value. So we at the Center for Partnership Systems, and the website is centerforpartnership.org, have introduced new metrics that are very different from both GDP and most GDP alternatives. They show the economic value of the work of caring for people starting at birth and of caring for our natural environment. They're called social wealth economic indicators. And we have a team of wonderful economists now working to update and condense these 24 indicators, which is a lot of indicators, into a social wealth index. And that's very important.
Is there anything maybe we have forgotten or anything you would like to say, like really, but it's very close to your heart, which you would like to bring out. And but I hope this conversation isn't over, Rian. I'm not saying let's just finish. I would actually wanted to, you know, we have started these webinars and we invited sort of guests back to have an open round table discussion. I think I can sense it would be very valuable maybe with, for example, a female economist to have you at a round table if you were interested to join. But now to close off that session today, it would be good to have, like, I don't know, maybe is there something really very close to your heart, Rian, you would bring out or say?
Well, I think that we have an opportunity to, as I said, move to a new normal. But we only can use that opportunity once we understand that there is a partnership alternative, once we understand the partnership configuration. In terms of economics, we have to start with the obvious that is obscured, that economics don't just spring out of nowhere. They're like the family, like politics, like religion. Like education, they're embedded in a larger social system. So we have to have a whole systems approach if we are to really change economics. And this takes me really to education, because our universities are still so fragmented and frankly so completely off. I mean, I woke up one day from what I call this domination trance, and I realized that in all my years of so-called higher education, there had been hardly anything by, about, or for people like me, women. And then I also realized there's nothing about children. And even today, I mean, gender studies, men's studies, women's studies, queer studies, they're only 50 years old out of about 700 years of so-called modern education. But where did modern science and modern education come from? It came out of a celibate, all-male, misogynist, clerical culture in the Middle Ages. You know, the historian of science, David Noble, wrote a book called A World Without Women. And indeed it was. But also it was a world without children. And it's reflected. And it was a very siloed, fragmented consciousness. So what I want to leave listeners with is the understanding that we don't have to start from square one. There is a lot happening today, all of these movements, but they're really part of the same thing, challenging these traditions of domination and moving not to a perfect world, but to a world where both forms of humanity and everybody in between can realize their full human potentials.
You know what I really like about Rian Eisler is I love how she draws this strong connection between our most intimate relationships and the values we bring forth in those relationships and society at large. You know, for example, in the household,
care for the whole planet.
Yeah, the fact that we, in our homes, if we have a partnership with our partners, you know, we can make harmonious life together. And if we had a partnership in society, we could make life together. You know, and I really subscribe to that. For me, it comes down to this philosophy of leave no trace. You know, you want to clean up after the bathroom after you use it so the next person has the same opportunity that you had to use a clean bathroom or a clean kitchen. And you try to keep your common areas accessible to everyone. And I think if we had that same philosophy at large, you know, for society, you know, maybe we'd be in a better
place. What you talk about is clean after yourself and have clean relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you see this in the context of the global level, then that means let's not exploit just take what you need, and kind of in the way how indigenous people still live.
Mm-hmm.
Only take what you need and give it back. And we clearly have a very different system or systems in place.
Yeah, I think.
dominant. And yeah, that's fascinating how she makes this connection. And what I really love that she brings in this feminine side, or the where feminine doesn't mean necessarily woman. Of course, we want to, or we need a society which acknowledges and appreciates the feminine attitude, or the more feminine approaches, and acknowledges more feminine approaches, mm-hmm. you know. And where, when societies did that, we had provenly a lot more peace and harmony and sort of art-loving societies. And very important, this is a very important subject, you know, where we're still in on the society level, we are still fighting these weird hierarchical structures. And I think as, not as a woman only, I think, you know, everyone is kind of bumping into these boundaries or into these weird, how do you say it, structures? Or
yeah, lack of choice. I mean, basically she's saying you can either dominate or be dominated in that model. There's no option.
Right.
Which is really true. You have to kind of always be fighting.
It would be a complete win-win situation if we would take over Rian's model and it's like, let's do a partnership here.
Yeah, and it's, what's really fascinating to me is we actually have, as a human species, been in that partnership model for much longer than we've been in the domination model. And some trauma caused that shift. And we just have to get over that trauma and go back to partnership model. We have to let go of our fear.
Just.
That's
Let's
all.
Just get back to it.
Well,
yeah.
Better said than done, I guess. But we can try.
We are an independent, listener-supported podcast.
For the price of one latte per month, you can help fuel our work and keep our content untainted by commercial interests.
For more exclusive content, join us on patreon.com or click donate on potofgold.world.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul. I'm Mel Wymore.
And I'm Stephanie Overbeck.
Thanks for listening.